Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio today is Frankie Roberts, Executive Director of LINC, Leading into New Communities, and Walt Wolfram, a sociolinguist from NC State and Director of the North Carolina Language and Life Project. We're talking about the English language and African-American vernacular English, the changing view of this dialect, and the impact it can have on communities and individuals. Do you think AAVE has a role in mainstream American culture? Is the rejection of this dialect analogous to racism? Tell us what you think by calling 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using coastlinehqr. We have a clip from a documentary called Do You Speak American? And I want to get the reaction from both of you to this clip. It demonstrates how many American California schools actually use knowledge and structure of African-American vernacular English in the classroom as a tool for teaching children how to speak using the standard American English dialect. So let's listen to this.
Here we go. My grandpa cooked dinner every night.
Our person singular cooks. My grandpa cooks dinner every night.
Which linguistic feature is not in mainstream American English?
Third person singular.
Yes. And Marisol, how do you code switch this into mainstream American English?
My grandpa cooks dinner every night.
You just got 500 more points. He's funny.
He is funny.
Okay, Ariel Barón, what's the answer?
He is funny.
He is funny? Excellent translation. Here we go. We don't have nothing to do. Okay, quiet please.
We don't have nothing to do.
Oh, I'm sorry. That is not... I'll wait. That is not accurate translation in mainstream American English.
Okay, that last bit, nothing. It was so heart-meltingly adorable, this little kid. But Frankie Roberts, we found this clip notable because the teacher is using the terms code switching and translation. In other words, again, we're talking about two different languages here, not one being correct and the other incorrect. Do you think that's an acceptable way to teach young kids how to speak standard English?
Only if I'm going to provide a reward for being able to code switch versus being able to speak one over the other.
What do you mean by that?
In that particular clip, they were rewarded for speaking the standard English. We wouldn't reward a person for speaking standard English. We would reward a person who could effectively go in between the preferences.
That's an interesting observation. Yeah.
That way it's equal, and that's why we tell a person to restate it, because it's almost like speaking English versus speaking Spanish.
Walt Wolfram, what's your reaction to that clip?
Oh, I love the clip. I was a part of the advisory board who was behind Do You Speak American, and it's a wonderful incentive. They were playing the game Jeopardy using code switching as a part of that, and that's a wonderful incentive. Actually, what people may not know is we have a curriculum that is endorsed by the Department of Public Instruction for teaching Voices of North Carolina to eighth graders in North Carolina. So any teacher can spend a week teaching about the dialects of North Carolina, which includes everything from Coastal English, Ocracoke and Harkers Island, to Mountain Speech, Appalachian English, to Lumbee English, to African-American English, to Spanish, and even Cherokee. So there is a program where kids in the schools in North Carolina in eighth grade, as they study the history of North Carolina, can learn about the rich heritage of its language as a part of that history as well.
And that is that the North Carolina Language and Life Project, or is that a separate
thing? That's a curriculum under the rubric of the North Carolina Language and Life Project.
Tell us about that project. What is that project?
So that project is trying to raise awareness about language differences as an aspect of culture and background and diversity. So in that context, for example, Mountain speech is seen as sort of a product of the migration, the Scots-Irish influence, and so forth. And African-American English, like any other language variety, would be viewed as a language with a history, how it came about through the Caribbean, through from West Africa, through the Middle Passage, and how it left its influence on African-American lives. So it's just a part of the cultural and historical and linguistic background like any other aspect. And that's what we're trying to get kids to learn and appreciate, and they love it.
It sounds like it would be fascinating in a classroom setting and really help to sort of anchor those lessons about history. And I want to have you talk more about the origin of it in a moment. We have a couple of calls and we have an email, and I want to get to all of these. They're raising interesting issues. You're listening to Coastline. If you're just joining us, we're talking about African-American English, frequently called Ebonics. What role does it play in our culture, in our schools? Is it part of a rich cultural heritage, or does it label a person and potentially close doors to jobs, housing? Here to answer your questions, a sociolinguist from NC State, Walt Wolfram, and executive director of LINC, Leading into New Communities, Frankie Roberts. If you'd like to ask a question or share an experience, give us a call, 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Steve from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. There is a big difference, it seems to me, between appreciation of linguistic diversity and the practical work that Frankie Roberts is doing with the young man that he teaches. And it's even more different when you look at it from the perspective of a public school teacher, which is what I was. I taught ninth grade English, and about 30% of my students were African American. The norms of the curriculum for ninth grade English are based on standard American English. And so there's this tension from the perspective of both teaching and grading, of appreciation of linguistic diversity and fully understanding that it is its own African-American vernacular English is its own variety of language with as rich as standard American English, sometimes even richer. The tension between that awareness and the practical needs of instruction in a different kind of English, and the tension arises over making clear that the teaching is designed to enhance what the kind of thing that Frankie's doing, which is to say, look, here's the way the world really is, and there are consequences to you if you are not able to code switch. Mm-hmm. It seems to me, I have an actual question about that. I'm getting there. But it seems to me that the concept of the need to code switch is a pretty advanced concept. It requires it requires to some degree an understanding of how our culture works in terms of race. So I guess what my question is for the professor is, how early does this instruction start, and what rationale? Some teachers don't think you have to provide students with the rationale for learning, but I do. What is the rationale for doing so, and how early can you do it?
That's a really good question, Steve.
That's a really good question, because the fact of the matter is preschool kids have language attitudes, and preschool kids show language prejudice. So you can never start early enough.
What do you mean preschool kids show language prejudice?
Okay.
How?
So I'll show you. I'll tell you as an experiment. Okay. So you have two voices in a box. They're not seen. And they're imploring a three-year-old to take a set of crayons and a coloring book from them. And one voice sounds black and one voice sounds white. And the kids are asked, take my coloring book. And so the kids are then asked to choose, which coloring book do you want from which kid and why? And what you hear is kids saying, oh, that voice sounds mean. Three-year-old, right? Talking about an African American voice that has been identified. So that's what I am saying.
3-year-old white kids or 3-year-old black kids? That's a good question.
Yeah. Actually, the experiment was done with primarily white kids. All right. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if that would be similar, but at least it indicates a kind of linguistic profiling. So I would say it's never too early to include diversity. And I understand and appreciate the caller's tension that he sees. But there's an important point in which Frankie's program and our program complement each other. A kid who feels good about the way they talk because it has a history, it has a structure, it has a system, is much more likely to take the risk and learn standard English than one who feels, oh, I just don't talk right to begin with. So, and actually, we also have results on that that show that kids who learn about language awareness, about differences and diversity in dialects, are actually do better in standardized tests when they actually come to that point.
That's interesting. Steve, thanks so much for your call. We need to move on. Joe from Curie Beach, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. The court systems and the police and other agencies provide translators for foreign language speakers. I was wondering if there's any effort for helping people that speak AAVA exclusively.
In other words, translators within the judicial system, or are you talking about within, say, the police force?
Both.
Have either of you, Frankie Roberts, have you heard of anything like any kind of initiative like this?
Yeah, actually, the federal government do have those type of translators that translate Black English, Ebonics, have you, and especially with the rise of the hip-hop culture and some of the words that is almost meant to be kind of coded. So they have hired individuals and pay them a lot of money in fact, to be able to go through certain paragraphs, sentences, cell phone conversations to interpret it, for the lack of a better word. And I know that the federal government have that around, just Black folks, but other cartels, for the lack of a better word, that they find.
Yeah, but no local, state or local here in North Carolina that you know of?
Not here in North Carolina, but we are, in fact, our Light Manhood program, which is our youth program for African-American males, we are conversating with the police department to teach, and I shouldn't say teach, but have a professional development class that teaches the hidden rules of the so-called inner city. And certainly language, body language, and historical thought processes or practices is a part of that. And so we are proposing to do that here locally.
Language becomes a very important tool in understanding intent. You know, so for example, I remember back in the 70s, there was a Black Panther trial, and the Black Panthers, one of the members was saying, "Off the pigs," referring to kill the pigs. And the question of, is that a literal threat on the life of a police officer? Or is that simply a way of speaking that is highly agitated? So I would say that issues of this type are very relevant to our society, how we interpret crimes. As a matter of fact, there's a whole field of linguistics called forensic linguistics, in which linguists come into play doing everything from sort of, copyright issues and interpreting message and so forth. So these are Or, for example, you take the case of Rachel Chantel, whose language in the Martin case was highly suspect and became a critical component. And juries were saying, I didn't believe her because of the way she talked. I couldn't even understand her. Yes. So the language becomes a critical component of that.
Frankie Roberts, do you think that if more law enforcement officials and police officers who are actually out there on the front lines were conversant in African-American English, that it would lessen the tension between communities and law enforcement?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
If you could give a quick lesson right now to some members of law enforcement, what would you say, number one? What's one of the biggest sources of misunderstanding there?
Well, when we talked off mic, is one of them is making fun of the language. So if I come into a neighborhood and say, "What's up, brother?" and that's not who I am, the person see that as being inauthentic and pretentious, and you're making fun of me versus just being who you are, then that comes across better. And accepting how I speak as an equal, I think that's the biggest tension that you find, is that one is better, one is greater. And if I took the time to get to know your language or culture, then I feel like that you are not disregarding me, but accepting me and embracing me.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about African-American English. What role does it play in our culture, in our schools? Here to answer your questions, a sociolinguist from NC State, Walt Wolfram, and executive director of LINC, Leading into New Communities, Frankie Roberts. If you'd like to ask a question or share an experience, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Addison, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. This is my first time calling to NPR.
Well, welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Well, my question is, I was someone who was raised through a Catholic school, kind of taught, I guess, the King's English, with a very strict sense of what is the right subject verb, what is the right noun, what is the right, I guess, sentence structure. However, in addition, my family, my mother and father, are from the coal mining region of Pennsylvania, near St. Clair. So I get a lot of interesting dialect from there. Then I went to Appalachian State and was introduced to the Appalachian dialect. And I was just wondering, just the question would be, as I guess this field progresses, in our schools, will the English language be, I guess, taught more, grammar will be taught with more leniency, more forgiving of, I guess, different ways of speak it, or do you kind of imagine a future where there's still a very strict right way to write, speak, and spell?
Walt Wolfram, are we losing the prescriptivists? Are we becoming more inclusive in the way we think about language structure?
Well, I think we're becoming more flexible and tolerable. Even if you look, for example, at newscasters today versus 30 years ago, they're much more relaxed. By the same token, prescriptive norms are a part of life and will always be here. People want to tell us how to dress. They want to tell us whether to wear socks or not. They want to tell us how to do our hair. So if we think there's going to be a day when we're beyond prescriptivist norms, Lord bless you, because it ain't going to happen. And as a matter of fact, and linguists, although they like to rail against the non-prescriptivists, have their own little prescriptive niches. So, for example, we want to make sure that we use ungendered pronouns so that we use they instead of it. So everybody has a bit of prescriptivism in them. And I think we have to understand that that's a fact of society, how it operates, and it's not going to go away. So, but we are more relaxed, and as students learn more about language diversity, I think they are more relaxed about it, too.
Addison, thanks so much for your call. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about AAVE, sometimes called Ebonics, African-American Vernacular English, and why some people speak it, why some people reject it, and some call it a highly complex and legitimate form of the English language. With us to answer your questions, Walt Wolfram, a sociolinguist from NC State, and Frankie Roberts from LINC. You can ask a question or make a comment by calling 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. We'll take a short break and be back in a moment with a listener email. You're listening to Coastline.